Okay, there we go. Now everyone can hear me. Slight little hiccup with the computer. That's all good. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. This hour of The Jason Rand Show brought to you by mmcomfortsystems.com. Lots of news to get to this show on this Friday. A little hectic. It's okay. We're going to take you through a decision made by different school districts to increase their COVID-19 testing strategies that don't really make any sense. We'll take you through the apparent chance of snow across the Seattle area on Monday. I'm wondering how much snow we'll actually get. Plus, the question about whether or not Pioneer Square is safe. So, let's find out what's trending. And I'll just jump right into it. So, there is a story over at King 5, Woke 5 News, as I like to call them, because they decide to be stupidly woke to the point of embarrassment. And this is another story that kind of highlights the direction that King 5 is going in. And the title, as soon as I saw it, I knew it was going to be a dumpster fire of a story, at least in its coverage, because as someone who understands what's going on in Seattle, I could tell you very quickly that, yes, there's an issue in Pioneer Square. This is the title. Is Pioneer Square safe? Locals mixed on the need for more policing. Now, we know that, of course, Pioneer Square is not safe. The neighborhood in Seattle is not safe. How do we know that? Well, first, I suppose we can lean into the anecdotes, right? People talking about feeling unsafe. People talking about the instances that they've had with folks on the street. But we don't necessarily like to lean into the anecdotal. I don't like to do the anecdotes. What I do like to do is look at some of the data. Now, on the ground, again, we know that there have been an increase in violence there to the point where you had King County workers having to be escorted to the bus, to the train station, to the dock so they can get on the ferry and get home, escorted by security. Why would you need to do that if Pioneer Square was safe? Why would you need to do that? And then, of course, on top of that, you have the random stabbings and shootings that are happening all the time. You had that large encampment that was there, but apparently wasn't that big of a deal, I guess, not to the city, despite constantly having to deal with the increase of not just the clear mental illness on display, but of course the drug addiction on display and the drug dealing, open-air drug dealing happening at that encampment. Led to a random stabbing just the other week. But beyond that, you have the actual data coming from the city of Seattle saying that they are seeing an increase in actual violence. So, yes, of course, Pioneer Square is dangerous. It is not safe. But apparently, Chris Daniels over at King 5 says, locals are mixed on the need for more policing. And by locals, he means two people. And by the way, he doesn't even give any information showing a mixed reaction from the locals. He talks to two people who seem to be okay with the situation on the ground. There's that underground tour that goes by this particular neighborhood. You have someone, Terry Lynn Johnson. She helps out there. I don't know if she's an actual employee, the way that the story is written. But she's been working and helping there for 25 years. And I see this tour, I used to see, because they just moved the Fox studio that I use. That used to be in Pioneer Square, but has since now moved because of how dangerous it is, ironically, at least in part. But she says that all is well, despite me seeing all the time this group of tourists looking at the homelessness, looking at the situation, and you can see on their faces they're uncomfortable. But she says, no, all is well.
I feel it is safe out here. Yeah, I mean, I walk in or ride my bike, and it wasn't just about clearing the park. It was about getting these people housed and getting them sheltered.
Yeah, it's just about getting these people housed and getting them sheltered. I feel totally fine. This is not someone, of course, that you should use in a story like this. This is not someone you should use. This is someone who is, for lack of a better term, an activist. The kind of person who wants you to know that she cares. These are people, these homeless folks, just like you and me. They were just one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. It could be you. No, it can't. For the most part, it's not going to be you or I. Because we're not dealing with an addiction. We're not dealing with a mental health issue. And we're not dealing with a total lack of connection to family or friends who could help out when you're in need. But she wants you to know how compassionate she is. So compassionate that she will gaslight us, just like so many other folks on the left will try to gaslight us. She wants us to ignore what's going on the ground. She feels fine. Henry Watson, same thing. He's managing the renovation and construction at the old FX McCory's building. Nothing's wrong in Pioneer Square.
Yeah, I'm on site every day, and I enjoy coming to Pioneer Square.
He is on site every day. He enjoys coming to Pioneer Square. You enjoy coming to Pioneer Square? Why? And I mean this with all due respect. I don't mean this to be just mean-spirited, but I'm assuming you're not a sociopath. So tell me, why is it that when you go into a neighborhood that is overwhelmed with violence and homelessness, poverty, human misery, pretty much everywhere that you walk there, why would you enjoy it? I can certainly intellectually understand someone saying, look, it's not as bad as people think. I, of course, disagree because I'm familiar with the neighborhood. But pushing that aside, my disagreement, at least I can understand. Maybe for Henry, in his world, he's thinking about Skid Row. And if it doesn't look like Skid Row, then it's all good. But remember, it kind of doesn't look like Skid Row. Remember the City Hall Park that was overwhelmed with homelessness, including a murder, including a death of a dog kicked to death by one of the homeless people there, despite all the fighting, despite all of the drug use and the attempted rape. He loves coming to Pioneer Square. Why would King 5 put this in that story? Because they're trying to placate the self-loathing, rich, white Seattleites who want to feel like they're doing something, and they don't want to be shamed for the policies that they support leading to this kind of misery. They are trying over at Woke 5 News to appeal to the former fans of The Stranger who finally were basically forced into growing up and getting a job. They need a new media outlet, so they're trying to be that for them. And so they want to pretend that this is even a debate. They want to pretend that this is a debate. Maybe it's not as bad as it is in Pioneer Square. Look, I spoke to two people. They couldn't find anyone who had any concern. Okay, maybe people don't want to say on the record with Woke 5 News that things are bad here because maybe they feel like they would get attacked, bullied by folks in Seattle who don't want anyone to be honest about what's happening. Okay, maybe. But you don't have to use audio or video of people who are taking positions that are demonstrably false. Warehouser moving, ultimately from their brand new headquarters in Pioneer Square. They've refused to let their staff members go back to the office, citing in part public safety. You have businesses that are quietly leaving, some not so quietly leaving, not just Pioneer Square, but downtown in Belltown, Soto. They're leaving. So why would you even include these two voices who want to pretend everything is all right? What's the value there? What is the value there? It's to obscure what's actually going on. It's to obscure what Seattle has become. And they're happy to do that over at King 5. And it's embarrassing. It is embarrassing. But they'll do it over and over and over again some more. It's absolutely embarrassing. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. I'll be on Fox News primetime today on Monday morning, 8 a.m. I'll be on the Faulkner Focus. If you can't watch any of them, of course, you can go to youtube.com/JasonRants. youtube.com/JasonRants, wherever we have a hit, I will upload the video. Let's find out what else is trending. We'll pretend that it just said Snowpocalypse Mageddon because we're having a little bit of technical difficulties as it relates to the computer system right now. Monday, it might snow. Did you know that? It might actually snow. There's a chance for snow, at least we're told, on Monday across the Seattle area. There's a chance for snow. And when there's a chance, we go into overboard weather coverage. We lean into going overboard, baby. They say with temperatures rapidly dropping over the next few days, and today, by the way, it was freezing. We're told that it's possible that parts of Seattle will see their first taste of winter snow, and it's all going to potentially start on Monday. According to Cairo 7 meteorologist Nick Allard, he says lows will be dipping into the mid-30s today, tonight. Tomorrow, we might get some slushy snow showers in places as low as 1,000 feet in elevation. Sunday, it's supposed to dry out a little bit just in time for the Seahawks game, which I'm sure they probably wish it would be slushy, because if they lose again, they can at least point to that and say, it was the slushy rain. And then on Monday, there is a chance right now that there's going to be some sort of pressure system that can create the possibility of snow. What that looks like, I don't know. Cliff Mass has a podcast, and he got into some of the details of this weekend and why Monday could be the potential for snow. But Cliff Mass actually knows what he's talking about. We like Cliff Mass. And I'm wondering, just wondering, whether or not he's going to kind of throw some you know, water on the flames. I'm wondering if we're going to get into the snow.
Then things will get much more interesting on Monday. A far more powerful low-pressure center, energized by a potent upper-level trough, will take a southeastward track across the northwest tip of the Olympic Peninsula and then across the southern Washington Cascades on Monday.
By the way, even if he's about to disappoint and say that there's no snow, don't you like his delivery? He's just so calming, so level-headed. But I hope he ends this by saying, it's going to snow!
Southerly winds will occur south of the low center over the Oregon coast and, and the interior of western Oregon.
Okay.
But quite honestly, this kind of track is not ideal for lowland snow for Puget Sound and areas to the south.
That's
we need the
fair.
Low to go further south for us to get snow here in Puget Sound.
Okay. So I guess we shouldn't go into Snowpocalypse-mageddon coverage. Oh, we're going to do it anyway. Yeah, Snowpocalypse-mageddon. It's going to snow on Monday and everyone should freak out because that's my favorite kind. It's my favorite kind of news coverage, especially on some of the local networks. Let's look at how Woke 5 News is going to cover this. Woke 5 News will tell us somehow that it's racist. You know what? Our snowstorm really highlights the racist past of our weather systems. I can't wait for that story. Let's find out what else is trending.
In what's trending in Everett?
There we go. A convicted murderer's prison sentence was just reduced by about 7.5 years, according to the Everett Herald, thanks to a recent state Supreme Court decision. It occurred with Matthew McCowan. He was guilty of first-degree murder back in 2019 for tying up Michael Boone, 46 years old at the time, tying him up to a tree and leaving him to die in the cold at a homeless camp off 41st Street in Everett. Now, he was sentenced to 45 and two-thirds years prison, but thanks to a state Supreme Court decision striking down the drug possession statute, he ends up losing some of that time. Now, oftentimes, when we're dealing with bad guys who do things like this, if they were also found in possession of weapons or drugs, you add to the charges because you want to keep someone like this in prison for longer. You want them in prison longer, not less. And so you add these new charges, these additional charges. And before you know it, the punishment adds up. But unfortunately, because now we pretend in the state of Washington that it was unconstitutional to charge for personal possession in some instances, in most instances, we're just going to drop those punishments in the future. So a bad guy who should be in jail, frankly, for the rest of his life, will be let out 7.5 years earlier, if not more than that. Probably more than that will be released, because we release criminals earlier than we should. We do that all the time. And this is a guy, this is a bad guy who's now 29 years old. So he's going to have a future. He's going to have plenty of years left on his life once he comes out of jail. This is how important it is to push back against some of the nonsense that's coming out of the left. When they decided to legalize drugs, what they ended up doing is lowering sentences for crimes that aren't drug-related necessarily, not directly, but those crimes that occurred kept bad guys in jail longer, and that's no longer going to be the case, at least in this one. And I guarantee you there's going to be a lot more of these kinds of stories coming up. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. There's a new testing plan being rolled out in Washington State for schools, for school districts. And there's a piece over at Cairo 7 TV focused in large part on what's going on in Bellevue, though I think they get into some Seattle public school issue. But they're doing a weird bit on testing where they're doing it in groups. And there are parents like Erin out of Bellevue. She's a mother of two boys in the district. She works in environmental health and safety. So she's all like, yeah, bring it on. I love this idea.
I think it's great. The more information we have, the better informed we are. Burying our heads in the sand is not a strategy.
Correct. But no one's burying their heads in the sand. No one's burying its heads in sand. They're doing something called pooled surveillance. Pooled. P-O-O-L-E-D. They're throwing kids in a pool and seeing who... No, I'm kidding. As I say, seeing who floats. They float, then they're a witch. Pooled surveillance is very similar to the normal testing that you would do. You still get the nose swab. It doesn't go to the back of the head, just the nostril. And the swab is placed in that tube that, for many of you who have gone through the testing procedure, know all too well. But in this case, it's a larger tube because it can fit 5 to 25 swabs inside each of the tubes. So they're putting multiple people out of groups into these tubes. Heather Edlund is the executive director of teaching and learning over in the Bellevue School District, and she said to Cairo 7 TV that the strategy is basically to test as many people as possible.
You're testing asymptomatic people or people you don't suspect to have COVID.
Which makes a lot of sense. Let's test people for no reason. Let's just do it for the heck of it. It's free, isn't it? Like it's free to the school board or the teacher or the student or the parent or whomever who ends up getting tested, but we're all still paying for it. They're just not paying for it on the spot. And so they're testing a bunch of kids, putting it all into one tube, and if there are zero positives in that tube, awesome. Everyone in that school tube can move on and do your day's work in the classroom. But what happens if someone in that pool of between 5 and 25 people ends up being tested positive?
Right now we're asking families to isolate if they're in the positive pool. Each of those individuals would come in for an individual diagnostic test in order to identify who the positive person is in that pool. Jeez. We test kids in the morning. We get the results that evening.
Yeah, so it's a 12-hour turnaround for the test, but you're now doing extra work, extra testing on kids if there's a positive case because they just happen to show up in the same pool as these others. They might not have had any meaningful contact with that person enough to get COVID. Seattle's still not showing symptoms, whereas maybe the positive kid is showing symptoms.
And add another and thing to their list
doing,
of worries
doing double testing on all those kids.
Companies.
That might
and
you're drop gonna have them quarantined. He's gonna stop by on a new tool.
Very annoying.
It's called and very much a waste of time. Now, in fairness, this isn't being mandated, right? This is something that they are doing on a voluntary basis, and that's why only 30% of parents have said, okay, let's do it.
I think people are really hesitant to even do something.
We're getting into that so much more this hour
of
the Jason Rant Show.
Yeah, and they should be hesitant
the right way with. COVID impacts kids the least. COVID impacts kids the least. No one wants to say that on the news for some reason. They should be celebrating that COVID impacts kids the least. But by acknowledging that, they pretend that the implication that COVID isn't serious, we shouldn't care about it, doesn't have any no one's saying that. But we should absolutely celebrate the fact that kids are almost not impacted by COVID at all. Some are, yeah. If your kid has an underlying health condition that is serious, yeah, the kid can be sick. But even in those cases, death is incredibly rare. Incredibly rare. So that's what they're doing in Bellevue. Now, in Seattle Public Schools, they're rolling out a new process that's a little bit different. A little bit different. Dr. Carrie Nicholson is the interim director of health policy for SPS. And she also spoke to Caro 7 TV. They're doing something a little bit different, but they're considering something similar.
We're in active conversations right now to implement a strategy for test to stay.
Their strategy, test to stay, means that they are testing you if you want to stay, so you have to prove that you are negative. And they offer a modified quarantine for anyone who is a close contact of a student who had a COVID-19 positive test.
They would remain in school, and we would do testing, at least two tests at this interval, prescribed interval time, that it would allow them to remain in in-person learning. And so that's really our strategy, and our goal right now is to reduce the loss of in-person learning time.
And that, at least, I think that one is better than the Bellevue plan. You're at least keeping them in the school. But for some, they're just never going to be happy. There's some parents who are never going to be comfortable. And dare I say that Aaron Olson, who's a SPS parent, is never going to truly be happy. I know he's saying he's going to be. He's got an 8-year-old kid. He wants the kid to be fully vaccinated before feeling comfortable with normal life again.
Once they're vaccinated, that is going to be basically the last piece of the puzzle for us.
Well, that doesn't make any sense given the fact that there are so many cases, positive cases, coming from the pool of vaccinated individuals. Doesn't make any sense for you to wait until your kid is fully vaccinated for you to feel comfortable, because there are so many people who are getting COVID despite being vaccinated. Then you have Omicron. Does it work with vaccines? We don't know. Thankfully, again, so far, all the cases have been mild. Most of the cases, at least, I think most of the cases still at this point are being considered mild. Might have been one case of which there was a death, but that was a premature report, I think. We're still waiting on those details. But you think that Aaron, after getting the kid fully vaccinated, is going to feel comfortable? You should feel comfortable right now with an 8-year-old kid who's not vaccinated. Unless, of course, this 8-year-old kid has a serious underlying health condition, which, according to this report, there's no indication of that. People like Aaron, our friend over at Bellevue, she's just hoping the testing inside the school continues to grow. More and more and more and more people get on board.
Even that testing to know that we have a positive case and that we can isolate it and not have it spread throughout the community, I think would be ideal.
What I don't think these folks realize, like Aaron, that the push to get kids tested all the time, it's scaring them. It's scaring these kids. They think something's wrong. And for some of these kids, depending on their age, this is almost now all they know. They have distant memories of what school was like before COVID. And every day that goes by that you're pushing this kind of stuff on them, it's traumatic. Forcing them in a mask so they can't even see their friends' faces. Having them sit separated from one another during lunch. Not being able to interact. I just pray that the parents who have kids who go to some of these schools, or at least on weekends or maybe after school, letting friends come over and play, letting them go outside where it's almost impossible to even get COVID, regardless of your age. Let kids be kids again. Because until you're willing to do that, until you do that with your kids, they're going to be miserable. And long term, I don't know what this is going to do to these kids. I mean, see what's being done right now to adults. And this idea now that because of Omicron, we might have some new rules on domestic travel, really? Like a vaccine requirement. That was something that Jeff Zients said yesterday. He's the Biden COVID czar.
Well, we do, as I talked about, have those tight requirements on the international travel. We have the workplace requirements. Jonathan will continue to look at all options, and everything's on the table.
Everything is on the table. Everything. And that, by the way, includes a shutdown. I know that Biden, I think twice now, said, no, we're not doing Biden. We're not going to consider that. That's right now. We're not considering that. Yeah, right now you're not. But will you in the future? Because before you've made promises, you get the vaccine, you will never have to wear a mask. Oh, no, got to wear a mask again. There's so much inconsistencies here. There's so much back talk, double talk. And I just don't know if it's going to end. I don't think it is. I think it's going to get worse and worse. And that's me as an adult getting traumatized now by this. Or at least tired. I'm not traumatized anymore. I'm not going to follow rules that don't make any sense whatsoever. I'll begrudgingly follow others if I have to. I'm not going to participate, though. I'm not going. I've still not gone to a restaurant or a movie theater or anything. Definitely not a gym for different reasons. Where I have to show my vaccine passport. I'm just not going to do it. Will I eventually? Yeah, I will eventually have to. Unless I can just get away with not going out. But that has an impact on my mental health. Imagine what it's doing to these kids. Not being able to hang out with their friends. If you've got one of the parents who's being hyper protective on something that barely impacts their kids. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, I'll be on Fox News primetime today. I'll be on Fox News' Harris Faulkner show, the Faulkner Focus, on Monday, 8 a.m. If you miss any of them, it's okay. I've got all of my hits from Fox News on the YouTube page, youtube.com/JasonRants. Go there now, hit the subscription button. All the videos will automatically pop up on your home screen. You won't have to do anything. Just look at my pretty face. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show on KTTH. I'll be on Fox News primetime today. I'll be on the Faulkner Focus on Monday at 8 a.m. If you're not able to watch any of them, and if you missed any of my Fox News hits this week, quite a few, check out our YouTube page at youtube.com/JasonRants, where I made it really, really easy. You can just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Send RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Now, today, the jobs report came out for November, and it was bad. I mean, it was truly bad. The kind of result that is historically bad, and it's been the worst result for the president for his term so far. But good news, there's one more month to be even worse. I imagine it's going to be even worse in December. So the expectation was somewhere between 550,000 and 600,000 jobs. That was the forecast coming from economists. You want to go on the low end, you got 550,000 forecasted by Refinitiv Economics. And the Labor Department put out its payroll for the month, and it rose. We created, not even created jobs, but we filled just 210,000 jobs. Now, I make that point. It's filling jobs, not creating jobs. These aren't new jobs. These are existing jobs that have been empty. Remember, we've got about 10 million or so jobs that have yet to be filled. And so they filled only 210,000 of them. And it was very shocking to a lot of the people who cover this stuff. Amara Omiyokwe is a reporter with the Wall Street Journal. She covers this stuff. And she was on MSNBC, and she was pretty blunt.
This is a myth, you know. It's economists, as you said, were expecting around 573,000 jobs. We got significantly less than that. I think what you're seeing here is what economists have been talking about throughout the entire pandemic, which is that, you know, the trajectory of the economy is really going to depend on the trajectory of the virus and how people are responding to that.
Okay. It's not really about how people are responding to the virus, of course. I think most people can say when you are giving people a reason to stay home, you're giving extra benefits to people to stay home, you've got eviction moratoriums in place in certain parts of this country, then on top of that, you're saying we're going to force you into getting a vaccine. We've seen in the public sector, you've seen job losses that have been pretty tremendous in places like Washington State. But you've got now Biden, despite judges saying it's unconstitutional, he's pushing forward, he's still telling people, hey, businesses, you better force your employees to get vaccinated or at least put them through a test every single week, which is a burden,
all around the world and right here at home.
Such a burden that people just give in and end up getting a vaccine they may not want or need. Which, by the way, in 9 times out of 10, I'll probably disagree personally with a decision that someone else makes on this, but that's your decision to make. You get to make that decision for yourself, not me. I am not a doctor. I am only a pretend detective. But I am not a doctor. You should, I think, strongly consider it, and you should talk to your doctor. You shouldn't listen to me. You shouldn't listen to any talk show host or TV talking head or magazine writer on any side of this. You should talk to your doctor. The data does suggest that the vaccine is safe. Is it good at protecting against infection? It appears to be less and less and less effective. Kind of depends on how far out these people who are breakthrough cases are from their actual vaccine. But it does cut your likelihood of going to a hospital and of death. And that's a good sell to me. Am I going to want to get one every 6 months? No. Will I get one every 6 months? Probably not. We'll see. Kind of depends on what the variant is doing at the time. It's not as much of a hassle as it would have been if we still had a small supply of vaccines, obviously. But at the same time, we have very good therapeutics, really good therapeutics. But if you don't want one, you shouldn't get one. And the government shouldn't come in and say you can't have a job if you make a medical decision that it disagrees with. That is making the situation worse. Is clearly making the situation worse. Now, if you're the labor secretary, Marty Walsh, you look at this and say, okay, well, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. He was on with Fox Business.
It doesn't necessarily disappoint me because I'm looking at the picture, the whole picture here. And you think about since President Biden has taken office, nearly 6 million jobs have been added. Our unemployment rate
is No. The jobs have not been added. These are not new jobs. These are empty jobs that are being filled. But now listen to this spin.
Our unemployment rate dropped to 4.2%.
Our unemployment rate dropped to 4.2% from 4.6%. The reason why the number dropped is because the people who were looking left the workforce. They stopped looking. And when they stop looking, they don't get added to the unemployment number. We are at its highest rate of people who have completely dropped out of the workforce for this administration. It's the highest rate. That's not a good sign. It's 61%, 61.8% is the labor force participation rate. That is not a good number. That's a lot of people who have decided, I'm not going to look at all. And so you can look at that one data point, which if we had a healthy economy and the labor participation rate was higher, then that would be something to celebrate. But the real unemployment rate is a disaster.
2% lower than when he took office. So, you know, we still have a ways to go when we think about getting people back to work. But our recovery is happening, and it's happening in a strong manner.
I've heard some folks on the left point to the wage increase. You saw wages increase a little under 5% from a year ago. It's 4.8%. So it's 4.8% higher wages today than it was a year ago. However, inflation has hit over 6% on basic goods. We're not just talking about TVs and washing machines. We're talking about food. We're talking about healthcare. We're talking about taking your dog or cat to the vet. It's more expensive now than it was before. The inflation issue, the Biden inflation, as CNBC's Rick Santelli points out, is killing some families.
The American public knows. They know what's going on. You know, how many times a week or a month do you fill your car up? You know. How many times do you get the bill for your kids' school, whether it's private or college? You know. These prices. I just had a furnace go out. I was shocked. I was shocked at how much some of this stuff has gone up in the last couple of years.
And this is from someone who can afford that increase. And when CNN's political analyst, his name is Ron Brownstein, when CNN is going out there and saying, yeah, inflation is a danger to the Democrats, you understand that it's way worse than they're putting on because they don't want to piss off their Democrat friends who watch, all 12 of them, and they don't want to upset the Biden administration that they rely on for access. But when they're sounding the alarms, when they are raising the red flags, understand that that's serious.
I think that is a very clear and present danger for Democrats. And it's very similar to what happened in 2009 and 2010 when Obama was caught in kind of the legislative Vietnam of passing the Affordable Care Act, much like Biden is kind of slogging through the big muddy of passing his Build Back Better plan. Voters did not see did not believe the president was focused on their more immediate economic concerns.
I mean,
there are a lot of elements of the Build Back Better plan that will give them ammunition to say that they are eventually dealing with people concerns about rising costs. I mean, it has significant measures to help people with child care costs, prescription drug costs, mm-hmm. limiting insulin.
And it goes on and on. And he's right. But do you think that this administration is taking that concern seriously? They still downplay it. They're downplaying the supply chain crisis still. There are people like you who are getting your last minute
Seattle business
gifts for Christmas. Some of you waited to last. It's not quite the last minute, but getting close to it. Which, by the way, next week I'm going to announce a very cool gift idea for a new sponsor, but we're going to do it on Monday. But you're looking at the price of things and you're saying it's way more expensive now. It's a constant reminder. And yeah, every time you fill up that gas, it's a constant reminder. So you can, you know, wave the numbers around. Look at our wage increase by 5%. Yeah, but it's still not covering the increase in just basic cost of living, which means that wage increase isn't actually a wage increase. If inflation didn't go up, that wage increase actually matters, but it doesn't because it's still not even covering the total cost of everything that's gone up. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. Again, don't forget I'll be on Fox News Primetime. If you want to watch that, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. I'll send you a link directly to my YouTube page, and you can watch the video once it goes live. Again, text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.